You may need one, you may not. As a food service operator in a leadership role, this may be very important to you. Of course, you may not need it depending on your situation. What am I talking about? The Food Safety Manager Certification. That is the focus topic for today. Welcome to the Good Food, Safe Food Podcast. Howdy, everybody, and welcome to the second episode of the Good Food, Safe Food Podcast. This is Matt Licklider, your host. We started this conversation with the last episode, starting to talk about the Food Safety Manager certification process and options out there. And this is continuing on with the second part of this conversation. And it's a really good idea around this conversation. If you haven't listened to the first episode, please go back and listen to it at some point, whether you do it right now or whether you want to come back after this episode. You can certainly listen to this rest of this episode and stand alone. This, of course, is the real world food safety talk for the real world operations, is the way we phrase this. And the Good Food, Safe Food Podcast is all about trying to demystify some of the conversations around food safety and food safety practices, and really just bring to light the food safety practices that can really be impactful in your operation for real life, for real business. So we'll start this episode off by a quick overview of what we covered about last time. We talked about the couple different organizations that are out there who can give you your food safety manager certification. We talked about the different organizations that can offer different kinds of training. Usually it's the same organization in a lot of ways. And then of course we talked about the expiration process and do you really need it or if you really don't and how that would work and how that looks. And again, remember, talk to your local regulations, check the websites, check their resources. You can find out more information about as if you are required or not. In a lot of cases, you probably already know you are already required or not. And if you were new to this management level or leadership level of food service operations, again, you might have some more questions to ask about your organization and what it can look like. What I want to talk about now is just kind of talking specifically around the test itself. Now, I have experience working with ServSafe for years, a great organization. We work with them. I've also worked with State Food Safety in a different way, taking some of the other tests that are out there as well. So I cannot speak to every single test out there, but I gave you the basic premise of the idea of the test. And so you understand what you're walking into if you've never taken one before. And if you haven't taken one in a while, okay, well, maybe this will give you some refresher as to when you have to renew. Most of the tests that are involved have a proctor involved in the conversation, somebody who's keeping an eye on you to make sure you're not cheating. Pretty fair, right? I mean, remember the, school where you had teachers say, don't look at somebody else's paper, things like that. Same idea. And that proctor is there to administer the test, but to make sure that you're not doing anything that would compromise the test. Now, I say that because there are some exceptions in the United States. There are some exceptions where you can take the test without a proctor involved. And that's just the way that state is set up. So again, follow your local regulations, but the vast majority of the states require a proctor to be involved. And that proctor may have also been your instructor as part of the preparation for this test. They may have been the one teaching the class all day to you or last 2 days or whatever that structure looks like. Again, we talked about that last time. So that instructor, that proctor is there to kind of administer the test, make sure that you're not cheating. Now, there is a lot of movement in the online testing activity where you would have the opportunity to take the test and you have someone sitting at a computer, possibly hundreds or thousands of miles away, watching you and watching to make sure that you're taking the test accurately. That is a newer, I won't say it's completely new, but it's a newer format that some people are familiar with and some people aren't. Some people love that because they're used to doing all the training on computers and they're used to it and they're very adept to computer training and knowledge, and that's just kind of what they've learned. And there are some people who prefer the face-to-face kind of conversations. Now, face-to-face, you're going to be sitting in a room. You're going to be sitting in a testing exam area. It should be safe. It should be secure for you. You should be spread out. All the proctors are reminded of that. And so you're not tempted to look at your neighbor's test or exam or anything like that. And if you're doing it face to face, you might be probably on a what's the word I want to use? Old school, fill in the blank, pick the letter of the alphabet, A, B, C, or D, and fill in the little bubbles. They're often called scantrons in the United States. It might be called something else where you are. Basically, you're going to be going through the questions and you're going to be answering the questions and filling in your best answer in a time period of generally 2 hours, but some of them are a little shorter from what I understand. And you get back 2 hours to do this process. So that is really what the test is all about. And if you're doing the online version, it's the same thing. You're just using a mouse and you have a computer screen in front of you, and you're just clicking buttons and telling them, I like A, B, C, or D in most cases. And you're just giving them the answer. You're not going to be usually asked to write down all of the bacteria that are out there in food service world, or you're going to be asked to, list the steps of hand washing, in a classic sense of like answering a test. That way, you might be given four answers and you have to pick A, B, C, or D, and what's the one that's best as far as those hand washing questions or the bacteria questions or whatever that is. But it's really going to be A, B, C, or D. One of the things that I always tell people is when you're taking the test for the first time and you've never done this, is take the time to really listen to what the proctor, the person who's giving the test, tells you. In most tests, you are able to go back and look at previous work. What I mean is, you come to a question, you take a guess at it, and then you just kind of feel uncomfortable about it, or you just to toss up between two questions. How do you go back and fix it? And in a paper, it's pretty obvious. You can choose to skip the question. Just make sure you stay on the right numbers, because we've had that happen. I've actually administered a test where a person got off their numbers and was answering question 15. On the book, it was 16. And that, of course, will cause problems for your test. But you can do that with paper. And then on the computers, there's usually a little spot where you can say mark for review or come back later or something along those lines. And it will let you know that you've reviewed that and you can jump back there. Now, there might be some certification tests where you do not have that option and your answer is committed. So make sure you're listening to the proctor. I say that because one of the tricks that I teach when I'm talking about test taking strategy is the fact that sometimes you'll be reading a question and it'll very correlate very closely to a question that was earlier in the series or earlier in the process. So it's really, really important to take the time to recognize that, oh, this sounds very familiar, and that triggers your memory, and you can go back and look at another question and realize what your answer was or wasn't supposed to be. And so that's where this test-taking strategy starts coming into play around this. Now, people will ask me, oh, how many questions is on the test? And I can tell you, I've seen anywhere from 80 questions up to 120 questions. Currently, I know SurfSafe has about 90 questions on the test. And SurfSafe does this. I don't want to word, want to write, put the right words. They do so float some questions out there that do not hurt you, but do not help you. They're just testing to see how the questions are answered and if they come across clear for the test takers. And so you don't know which ones those are. And there's other organizations that do something similar as well. And so you don't know which ones those are. So you may not be graded on all of your questions. And your proctor won't know the difference. He or she won't know what the differences are of those questions. So you're always in your best mindset to answer every single question, because you do not know if there's floating trial questions on you or not. And again, your proctor will tell you if they are, assuming they're allowed to, will tell you if there are trial questions or test questions that are being floated out there by the organization that don't necessarily help or hurt you if you get them wrong or right. So it is important to listen to the proctor as you're learning about what is going on. Now, if you're taking the online test version of that, you will have pretty clear guidelines as far as how you're going to proceed. You'll generally click through certain screens, tell you not to cheat, make sure that you're doing things right, walk you through how the screen layout is there. And of course, if you're doing in person and you're doing the Scantron version of this, your proctor will also walk you through how to handle filling out the forms, filling out your name, filling out your address, if that's appropriate, whatever that looks like. They'll help you walk through all of that conversation. So very closely listen to your proctor. Don't just jump into the testing process. Then your instructors will usually tell you when you can start. If you're doing the online version, your proctor will tell you you can get started. And then you'll have the opportunity to take the test. And as you're going through, like I said earlier, you might have the ability to take some notes somewhere. Well, yeah, I will say this almost 100% of the time, they will not let you check with your notes or book because it's not open book tests for most of these organizations. I'm not going to say it's 100% because I'm not sure about every single organization out there, but you will not have the ability to reference material, but you might have the ability to take notes somewhere on a piece of paper that's been cleared by your proctor if they allow that for the particular test. So again, pay attention to what your proctor allows. Find out your time frame. If you are somebody who stresses out about time, it is important to know that about yourself and don't look at the clock too much. Just do your best. Do not get bogged down on a particular question. It's better to either take your best guess out of it or to skip it and come back because you don't want to spend a ton of time on questions 1, 2, and 3 and then have to rush through all 100 that are left or whatever the number is in for your particular exam. You want to be careful about that. That being said, you also don't want to rush. So one of the tricks that I always teach people if I'm talking about test taking strategy is read the entire question and then read all 4 of your options. Don't just assume and look for what you think is the right option and just go to that. Because many of these organizations are famous for giving 2 or 3 answers that are very similar. Generally, there's one you can throw out right away, although not always. And so if you even just, sometimes it's simple numbers, like you'll get one thing that like with one number change can change the whole answer to the question. But you'll jump to it because you're like, oh, I got the answer. And then we'll skip to the next one. What I'm saying is just don't race through it. Even if you're comfortable, even if you've studied food safety, even if you've done this, it is really important that you just take the time to read through all 4 answers and then pick the one that you feel most comfortable. That is simply a strategy. So if you are reading through the questions and you come to one where you're a little bit of a toss-up between 2 of the options and you really don't know if you want to go with one or go with the other, it's almost like flip a quarter kind of a thing. You know, I recommend that you step back, go on to another couple questions and then come back to it and reread it again and make sure that you feel comfortable. Generally, you can eliminate 1 or 2 of the answers pretty quickly. Hopefully you can, but it's a good idea to always, if you're stuck on something, walk away from it for a second and come back to it when possible, because that way you can kind of get your mindset and rereading it, you might be more comfortable with taking 1 or 2 of the answers. Somebody the other day in a class that I was facilitating and proctoring, they literally were flipping a quarter at one point. I was like, okay, which way do you want to go here? I'm not saying you can't do that, but I'm not saying it's the best practice. Always try to give the best answer that you can. Because again, you want to be as accurate as possible. You want to get as best a score as possible on this exam. Now, that being said, if you are comfortable with the material and you're going through it and you feel like you're moving at a good pace, that's fine. Don't feel pressured to slow down unless you feel like you're rushing. If you feel comfortable with the material, I've had many students who said, it only took me, 30, 45 minutes to do the test. That's really fast. Should I have taken longer? Did you pass? Yes. Okay. Then you're fine. Most of the exams will not give you the actual information of how you did after the test. That is because they want to protect the questions. They don't want those questions getting out there into the world and people cheating off of those. So it is important to take the time to look at the questions, really understand it. If you have some follow-up that you want to do, or if you're allowed to take notes, then maybe you can follow up with the instructor after you've done the proctoring, after you've done the exam, turned it in, following the proctor's prompts and computer prompts or whatever that looks like. But making sure that you're ready and set up for success when you take the test is really key to this conversation. Of course, after you've finished your exam, your proctor will tell you how much time you have left. Important for you to pay attention to that. And then the proctor will eventually let you say, okay, we're done. And we'll want you to turn in your test or submit it online or whatever that looks like for a particular exam that you're doing. And then in some cases, if you're doing the computer version, you'll know right away, or you should know right away if you passed. On the paper version, if you're doing the Scantron, generally they have to send those in, and you can expect 1 to 3 weeks, somewhere in that window, delay before you get your results, whether you get the results directly from the organization or whether you are getting it through the instructor or whoever's teaching the organization for you. It's just really important to make sure that you do find out your results. If you do get a certificate, a lot of organizations, a lot of health departments require that you post that certificate either on your communications board or your licensure board or have it in a binder somewhere for reference. It's always good to have that information for yourself. And it's always good information to have for your leadership in case they are looking for it, your upper leadership, to make sure that you are certified on food safety if it's required for you. Of course, the regulatory will be looking at it during their routine or special visits to you. And we'll talk more about how to handle those visits down the road. But this goal here is to kind of give you just some test taking strategies as we talk about that food safety manager certification process. Final thing I will say, and I talked about it last time during we were talking about why and how and training and things along those lines. Somebody asked me the other day, like, do I really have to take the training class to go to sit for the exam? And I said, no, you don't, not in this state anyway. You didn't have to, but I recommended it strongly because this person had taken the exam 5 years ago. This was a particular 5-year renewal state. And 5 years ago, food safety has updated a lot of things, and there's been a lot more conversations about some of the standards. And in the United States, there's been a lot more conversations around allergens and some of the updates around that. So it's really helpful for you to get updated when you're coming around to the renewal timeframe of this conversation. You may feel comfortable dealing with those kind of questions and being able to come up with the right answer, but if you don't have that background, if you don't have that training for the new updated information, you might miss some of those questions. And you might be missing some of the conversations as you're having with your local jurisdictions about the food safety risks that are going on and trending in your area. All of this to kind of say, I hope when you do get to take the test that you go in with an open mind, test-taking strategies, and that you feel comfortable taking those tests. So that is the goal here, to kind of give you some of my tips and some of my tricks around taking the test itself and growing from that perspective. So we'll continue this series on one more series. We've got about the actual food safety manager training classes. We're going to talk more about that in the next one. So please listen to those sister episodes that are on each side of this conversation. We welcome all comments. We welcome all questions. That being said, I always like to tie this back to food safety culture. And food safety culture to me, when I say that, is what is the food safety in your facility at all times look like? And how does this test relate to food safety culture? Well, the test is kind of like your degree. It's like your promotion. It's like you've shown that you can answer a lot of questions about food safety in a proctored environment. And that's really cool. And that's a really good way for you to kind of show and demonstrate not only to your customers, but also to your teams, to your employees, that you are committed to food safety. And it's just one other way you can do that. Now, again, I get that some jurisdictions, back to episode one, I get to some jurisdictions may not require you, some companies may not require you, but it is the opportunity for you to grow and demonstrate how committed you are to the food safety culture in your facility. So with all that being said, I welcome you to listen to the next couple of episodes. With that, I will say I hope you're having a great day. Make it a safe one. Talk to you later. And now for the disclaimers. This podcast and video is for entertainment purposes first and educational purposes second. This should not be considered professional advice. The Good Food Safe Food Podcast and its guests are not responsible for any losses, damages, or liabilities that may arise from the use of the information of this podcast. Any views expressed on this podcast may not be those of the host or the management of C4FL or the Good Food Safe Food Podcast family. As with all things food safety, contact your local health department or regulatory jurisdiction as they are the final say when it comes down to food safety for your operation. Good Food Safe Food is not responsible for any misunderstandings or challenges due to these interpretations. Any specific mentions of specific entities or businesses on the podcast is not an endorsement unless otherwise said. All trademarks and business names are the rights of the individual businesses. This podcast may not be republished or rebroadcast without the consent of the management of Good Food Safe Food Podcast and or its owner, C4FL.